Hello, and welcome back to the Swearapus podcast, your tattooed and screwed look at the underbelly of therapy culture. I'm your host, Lisa Hoffman. As a reminder, the Swearapus podcast is meant for your entertainment and insight only, not for clinical advice. The opinions given here are strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what works for you, leave the rest. We encourage you to be aware of your own triggers and concerns and to exercise discernment at your own discretion. We are here to fuck shit up. The person that I have asked to join us for this episode, is somebody who I love on multiple levels. And I was thinking about this today, how I was going to introduce this person. He is somebody I was trying to think about, like the first time I ever met him, and I have no idea when that even happened. This person is somebody that, I feel like I've just been friends with forever. He just popped up one day and was automatically a part of my life. He is a part of my personal recovery. He gives a lot of insight, especially to the men in my life, and that's very, very important to me. But he also has some experience working in the field connected to mental health. Maybe mental health adjacent is how I would describe it. But listeners, we will go ahead and welcome Will M. from Ashtabula, Ohio. How's it going, bud?
Hey, how's it going? Having a
Oh, it
blast.
is fabulous. So thankful that you agreed to join us today. So tell the listener a little bit about you, Will. What makes you tick and what you do that is relevant to the Swearapist
Interesting question. Okay. I don't know. So obviously we've known each other a while then through the podcast world, like it's something we connect on both. But I've never been on a podcast or any kind of anything that wasn't connected directly to recovery. So yeah, this is kind of weird. I am not educated. I do not have degrees. I do not dabble in the therapy side of things too often. I did as a child, but I guess what connected me to it is you referred to it as I'm a board president to a place called Club Agape in Ashtabula, which is a recovery club. But well, it's a recovery club, but. We also have a three-quarter house for men trying to get back on their feet coming out of rehab, prison, whatever the case might be, or just falling on some hard times. And Ashtabula is by no means a big metropolitan or city, but we do have we right on Main Street in that area, so right ground zero for a lot of walk-ins of all walks of life looking for help and things. So I have kind of, I do bump into a lot of that on a daily basis.
And there's a lot of homeless people also in Ashtabula, right?
There
I
is,
think that
yeah. So our homeless community, I don't know what a lot is, but they're there. Yes. They're there and it's hard to miss. I don't know why, but I know on Main Street, because you have a lot of you have like your signature health and your community counseling and all your state offices and stuff are right on one strip. So they're not too far from the help they need by staying in that area. Which is a lot of the reason the guys that come to the house we have, that's a big reasoning for as well. When they have to walk to be able to drop, do their urine screens, their treatment programs, like we're centrally located enough that it makes that an easy hop, skip, and a jump for them.
You're in the perfect place to kind of catch them all as they're walking by.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about like the three-quarter house. I think a lot of people are relatively familiar with the idea of a halfway house. What's the difference?
I don't know. There's a lot of freedom.
So my
That's
understanding,
what.
having worked half my life away, it feels like in the field of drug and alcohol, generally speaking, a halfway house is a level of care that comes after somebody completes a residential treatment program, usually an insurance company or a county. In Pennsylvania, we have what's called a single county authority or a county drug and alcohol basically will pay for a person to go and live. It's not a residential treatment facility, but it is recovery-based housing where essentially you have some requirements you have to meet. You have to go to counseling, some of those places, you have to go to 12-step meetings. The three-quarter house is kind of the step down from that, where there's less requirements. You said there's a lot of freedom. How do you guys take in guys? What's the process of getting a dude, like you said, from jail or from treatment? What's the process of getting a guy into a bed at your house?
Most typically, it's usually a treatment facility looking to place somebody, and yeah, I think the real answer to the difference, I think a halfway house has to staff or employ somebody with credentials
at
on premises. Whereas we're very grassroots, like, the board, everybody there, nobody gets paid to do anything anywhere here. It's all, if you're familiar with the service structure in a 12-step program, it's very, that's all our experience. So that's kind of how it goes. Revolving board, and whoever's been at the house longest and is the most responsible has in-house. I have an out-of-house manager as well that's a board member. And we just stop in, but it's $75 a week. It's been the same price since I got clean 11 years ago, and that was the price then. It's never gone up, and that just pays the bills and keeps everything going. It doesn't really raise enough for anybody to get an ego or carried away or try to steal anything, because there's just not much there, you know.
Hence the nonprofit aspect, right?
I'm a big advocate for getting help however you get help. But I always joke that, like, listen, you're going to go pay $40,000 to these institutions so that they can tell you to come see me for free. And, you know, that's just the way it's worked throughout history. Like, the 12-step movement or whatever it might be, like, that's usually where those places send you at the end of the day. Like, they prep you to go live this free lifestyle. So not everybody coming out of jail or treatment has the ability, especially in today's environment, to put you know, down a deposit and a first month's rent and have everything. So, like, guys move in with no money a lot of times. Like, we let them get on their feet for a couple of weeks. I hate to say it out loud, but we slide on a lot of rent, because I'm more invested in seeing you get somewhere than I am making a dollar. Like, you know what I'm saying? Or the club's making a dollar. So a couple of the board members own businesses. If the guys need to make rent or need work, they have work right away. It's pretty self-sustaining. It's really fun to watch work. I struggle because I work in big business. So I crunch numbers a lot. Like, I am very into marketing and the things like that. Like, I know how this all works. And to see something that is like the complete opposite just flow and not fall apart is pretty cool. And I think there's some underlying reason for that. I don't know what it is. Call it God, call it whatever, karma, whatever it is. Like, there's a lot of people in our community that when you run into them, they're like, hey, you're doing great things down there. Thank you so much. And, like, you don't realize you're doing anything until, you know, judges and police and people like that are pulling you off to the side and thanking you. So,
and that's also shocking, I think, for us as people in recovery who, you know, like, a decade, our clean days are only a couple days apart, you know, which I love celebrating with you at the end of February every year. And when we first come in, I think there's that aspect of, like, I've believed or I've been told my whole life that I'm not going to amount to anything. And then to be face to face with a judge or a cop or a lawyer who's saying, like, man, you're doing good work. It's a little surreal sometimes. You just said so many things that lit my brain on fire, which is why I always love talking to you. I don't know. So I want to talk about the service structure of 12-step fellowships and relate this to what you do, because I think a lot of our listeners might not even be aware. But when you talk about, you know, institutions, especially in the drug and alcohol field, are essentially prepping people to come to you, right, to recovery in the community, like, and I use the word addicts on this podcast, it's our word, it's how we identify, right, to help addicts find other addicts in the community. I don't know if you know this, Will, but you were essential to my decision to step out of the field of drug and alcohol. And I don't know, I don't think I've shared this with you ever. So a while back, you sent me a song by an artist named Ren, and the song is called Hi Ren. And it fucking captivated me. I listened to it until I hated it, and then I listened again and loved it again, right? Like, and every time I listen to it, it's something new. But there's a line in that song where he says, she sells seashells by the seashore. And I do this thing when I latch onto an artist where I'll, like, listen to their whole catalog just to, like, get a feel for the big picture of the artist. And I was listening to his music and that line kept popping up in a couple of other songs. And I was like, okay, I'm, like, supposed to hear this. And I started kind of, like, meditating on it, praying on it a little bit for myself. And, like, the thought occurred to me, and this is for me, again, going to remind the listener, it's my fucking podcast, my experience, right? If it's not your cup of tea, make your own, right? My experience with that moment was that I realized I had kind of built a career inside of a system that makes a dollar when our people stay sick, right? I relapse, I go back to treatment, I do the things that they say. I don't want to get into like big ethical debates on like whether or not those pathways are correct or not. I know what works for me. I know what works for you, right? And I realized I was selling seashells by the seashore when the seashore was free in my backyard in these fellowships that consist of, again, the biaddicts for addicts, where I can walk in at no cost, be loved at no cost with no expectation, right? And that didn't sit with me. So when you talk about like the profit margin, right, with these vulnerable people, I feel that in my soul, right? And it is pretty cool to see, like, even though it's not a money-making operation, that it still can help people. And it sounds like you get a lot out of doing that.
I get it. I have gotten a ton. Let me, so just those who don't know, I just informed them yesterday I'd be stepping down. But
Rotation of service, it's
my
you've been
2 year
doing that for
commitment
a long
was up.
time.
I took I've been on the board for 7 years. And I'm gonna stay on the board. I'm just not gonna be president anymore. But I told them I'd do it for 2 years, man. We had a couple senior members pass away from cancer a few years back. I'm gonna shout out Mike and Ralph, like they held that place down through COVID
I
and everything
love
else.
them so
And
much.
that happened in like a 3 month span or 6 month span. And like, so it, the club was really in a bad position. So, like I said, my professional career crosses over very well with what I'm doing right now, as far as running a thing like that goes. So I stepped in and like I told him at the time, like, I'll give you 2 years. 'Cause I have ambitions too. You know, I have a property I bought and I have a career I'm still chasing. I have 4 kids at home, a wife. And when you have 8 days off a month and, you know, four of them is spent running a business for free, it gets to be a lot. I do want to touch on something you just said though. So it's funny, when I first took that place over, we people, you said people get referred to, how they do, the Catholic charities would refer people to us or whoever. But immediately upon getting there, they would contact Catholic charities and they would pay their first, I think it was 6 weeks or 3 weeks or some amount of time. Think it was a 6 week thing. And it was like a dance, man. People would stay for 6 weeks. They wouldn't get off the couch. I had people like, "Hey, can I get my own internet so I can play video games and stuff?" And I'm like, "No, no, you can't."
No.
They're like, "But because they're just, man, they would just stay the 6 weeks for free and then they'd take off, you know." And I'm not gonna say everybody. There's exceptions to everything, but I'm gonna say as a generalized majority, it just wasn't. And it takes me back to the 12-step movement. Like, our seventh tradition is, you know, be fully self-supporting. And so in the state of Ohio, they cannot regulate recovery housing as a state. My understanding, someone call me out on this if you want. I just know what I read on the internet at ohiorecoveryhousing.com. Okay.
In PA, it is regulated.
And you did not have to be a part of Ohio Recovery Housing. At the time, it was just basically an advertising platform. Like, I could be part of it. They would tell people where my house was, blah blah. It was more sunshine or whatever you want to call it, more exposure. And so I didn't do it because I was like, it just doesn't seem worth it to me. There's a lot of hoops to jump through to get that done. And there's a couple things we do at the house that they weren't on board with. We require 2 hours community service at the club a week. Maybe that's how we maintain the property and stuff like that. And it just, oh, you can't tell them they have to do this. I'm like, well, I do. You know, and so it's worked. And anyway, long story short, it got to a point where they kind of made a workaround where they can't regulate how you run your house, but then they said you can't get that mental health money unless you are part of, which I then called some state reps and said, I don't know what's happening to the rest of this money, because as far as I know, there's 13 houses in Ashtabula and only two of them are on that list. So I don't know where that's going. Not my problem, but a big, very fear moment. I was like, I'm about to either make my life a lot more hectic trying to do this paperwork and keep up with these things, to try and chase this easy money, or I'm gonna say, hey, listen, you're self-pay only here and hope for the best. And that was about a year and a half ago, 2 years maybe. And our success rate's just gone through the roof, like with the self-pay
Amazing.
thing. And like I said, if someone comes and they say, listen, I'm clean, I just got out of treatment, I have no money, I have no nothing, I'm just gonna walk you to your bed as long as you can pass your piss test, and I'm gonna explain the rules, and as long as you agree with what we're doing here, we'll get that. And you're not gonna be on the street. Same with leaving. Hey, everybody leaves. If they get housing on a Monday night. They run out on a Sunday night, so they don't have to pay a week. I always tell them ahead of time, like, I don't, dude, listen, if you're leaving, say that last week, whatever. I don't care. Like the,
and don't rob I'm anybody happy on to your see way
you
out.
go. I am. Yeah, I'm happy to see you go.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't until the point of self-support that it really started to bear fruit, like to where people were like actually taking ownership of what was going on in the house, looking at what they're doing. The conversations got so much more fun. Because I sit down with my guys once a month and I'm like, hey, where are you at? When they first get there, how long are you going to be with us? Do you think, are your goals getting met? Are you closer to where you're trying to go? And like I said before, when it was just getting paid for by the state, it was always, eh, I'm doing whatever. And now it's very clear. Like, this is my path to get out of here. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know. And now and you mentioned like other people grooming people are making a buck off something, but like, mm-hmm. Here, my thing is, there's a number of houses here and we all talk shit about each other, right? Because that's how business works,
right?
Like, never really, we're all talking about they're cool, but you know,
yeah.
But like, here's the thing, like, even with the places that are going with like the medical assistant, oh, and we do accept people on subs. I just want to share that,
mm-hmm.
Because we're one of the only houses that do.
Yeah.
And it's, if you know me, this is something I am not a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
However, not everybody runs my program, you know?
Right, exactly. What works for us doesn't necessarily have to work
yeah.
for anybody.
So,
who's
but
find
it
the
is
podcast
very clear,
either.
Like that we don't put people in rooms together that are and aren't, but
yeah.
I all those things that are there just to make a buck, they work if someone wants help, which I guess is the point I'm trying to reach.
It can,
is,
yeah.
is even the places that are like not doing it for the right reasons. Like, hey, if it's a resource is available to somebody, like, cause I'm telling you this, when I got clean, I don't care where you put me. I was making it, like I was going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of places that have easy things to latch onto on why you can't, if you're looking for that, but that person was probably going to latch onto something anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't
And
care
there is
what
a
your
line, I think.
facility's doing.
Yeah. And I think there's a line between facility administration and like the outlook of practice that comes from quote unquote the top. There's a line between like that and the actual service providers who are sitting down with clients in their chairs, right? Because like I know a ton of good therapists who work for shitty facilities too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've struggled with a couple, but like, well, fuck, I'll put it out there. I ain't got no legal nothing. You can't come for me. I don't care if you do. Like, listen, if someone's not an opiate addict and they end up on subs or treatment for opiates, like that rubs me really wrong.
Mm-hmm. Troy and I just talked about that on another
But another
episode.
thing
Coming
that's
from
here,
meth. Yep.
Ash Tabula. Yeah, I had a guy from North Carolina that was alcohol and meth. He showed up at a house on subs and Adderall. I'm like, what
Crazy.
the fuck? You know,
Yeah.
well, yeah, you don't have to go
Crazy.
get high anyway. Yeah, not here, son. You know,
Let's create a new problem.
yeah. So anyway, but and then try to talk to him. You can't talk to somebody who's talking to a doctor. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, my doctor said I need this. I'm like, well, I know I'm just some fucking nobody on the side of the road, but you know, I've been there and it doesn't look good, man.
I thought it was snowing and it wasn't fucking snowing.
That was funny. But yeah, I struggle with that part of it. Where I was going, but
that's okay. So why don't we shift gears real quick and talk about you and I have been very fortunate enough to serve side by side at all five levels of service in our chosen fellowship. Do you want to give the listener some insight? You mentioned like, hey, the service structure of the 12-step fellowships is very similar to how we do things at the club. So what does that service structure look like?
It's very simple to kind of a lot of boards, like Robert's rules and things like that. Like we just have we call it a president. It could be a chairman, whatever, a president, vice president, treasurer, a number of voting board members, and each board member can sponsor a trustee who hopefully will one day be a member.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, I just had a board meeting the other day. I want to say there was 9 people in the room, a couple that weren't there, but from years past, that's about double the number of people that show up. So it's catching back on. It's fun to see people getting involved. And it is weird though, because you run kind of like in the treatment field, people will confuse the club with recovery. Like, hey, this is
all
how
the time.
I'm getting my, this is, oh, this building saved my life. I'm like, this building sticks in
This building is a
glass.
building, right?
Okay. This building is a building. You better get yourself to a program or some kind of something. But
Mm-hmm.
it is a very rewarding way of being able to give back if that's something you're looking to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how to not move forward. I'm coming to see you. Like, so
if
something's
good at
available,
freestyle.
I gotta try. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll just do what's next, you know. And then they got me all the way to the top of that. Same in the fellowship. Like, it's you know, I just looked at what was in front of me and what was suggested, and then moved on to the next thing.
And in the fellowship, our service structure is what we would call upside down, right? So you have in any 12-step fellowship a number of meetings that occur in a week. And the home group is like the meeting that you attend every week. It's your home, it's your family. And we have below the home group, which is the like final decision-making authority, we have area service, we have regional service. It's kind of similar to like how, I mean, I hate to compare it to government because it's
It
not.
is.
But yeah, right. It's like county, state, federal level government, basically, where we have area, region, zonal, and world level service. But ultimately, like the groups do not wait for the World Service Board to tell us what to do. We can do recovery however we see fit. And there's a lot of debate in the fellowships about like the value of the World Service offices, and we don't have to get into all of that, but where does the final decision making, I don't know if power is the right word, but who does the final decision making with respect to your this nonprofit?
The whole board. So yeah, we meet monthly. Any issues that are brought up there are motioned and voted on at that place. But like a lot of things, like my influence has a lot of weight there. So it's hard to bring something to the board without them going, like, just looking at, staring at me like, oh, what are we going to do? You know? So I try to be as neutral as possible. Same, like when I do service over there, like when I go to back to my home group with information, since I'm the one that was at the meeting, they're like, well, what should we do? I'm like, well, we have to decide, you know? But reality is it's very,
How does that feel when people are coming to you for answers?
Yeah, at times, but I mean, it is much different. So I did try to treat it just like a fellowship for a long time, but the reality is in a business structure like that, there has to be a leader at the top that can just pull some triggers when they need to. I was very skeptical of doing that for a long time until like, I finally was like, I even asked him like, this is what you want me to do. Right. Cause like this, we have to make a decision.
That's not quite what we're taught.
And
right?
Yeah, we're not, we're not taught that. And I'm like, yeah, there has to be somebody at the top. Like when we bought the property, because we own the property, like somebody had to sign for that. Like when we go do bank accounts, things like that, like somebody has to sign for that. Someone's name has to be, it's multiple people, but like ultimately, like there is some personal investment that has to happen.
I feel like a lot of therapists can probably relate to that idea too, is like, people come to us looking for answers, and that's not generally what we are like. We're not necessarily there to provide answers. I say all the time, it's my job to ask the right questions to bring out what's already present in you. It's not my job to tell you or give advice. And it feels a little bit strange when people are like, well, you know things, you have the answer.
Sounds like a weird fortune cookie.
I bet I'm the weirdest fucking fortune cookie on the books. Like, I'm sure people sit in my chair and they're like, how the fuck
No,
did I?
I've been in counseling and therapy situations since I was about 10 years old. Up until, oddly enough, until I got clean. But
oddly enough.
Oddly enough. So not knocking it, because it taught me how to talk to people. I can tell you that. Like when I got a sponsor and I got involved in things like that, like that relationship kind of status quo was there. So yeah, I and all my children, like after I got divorced and things like that, they all went to see counseling as well, because just for me, I was like, there's stuff you're not going to talk to us about that you need to talk to somebody. Because we're not going to keep it in. And I had that same experience growing up, so now I'd like to say, look how I turned out, but hey, you know, we're just gonna
I
hope
mean,
it
we
goes the
could
other
joke
way.
about it all day long, but I think you turned out just fine in the
Yeah,
end.
that's then, and there you go. To your point, yes, in the end, it all worked out. But there are some bumpy roads along the
For
way that
sure.
you hope your children can avoid.
So, how is your memory of therapy? Are you able to recall situations? Like, if I said what was good, what was not so
Oh,
good?
absolutely. Like I used to, I share all the time when I share my stories and things like that. Like I ended up on Ritalin on a fake test. Not a fake test, it was a real test that I faked, however you want to call it. Like I was like 12, 13. I have to walk from school after school. I wouldn't ride the bus home that day. I would walk right down the road to where my counselor's office was, and they gave me this assessment test, whatever, where I was supposed to hit the space bar on a computer every time the letter X flashed on the screen. It was like running through the alphabet.
I'm picturing you doing this as an adult, and it's hilarious.
It's great. So I'm just hitting
You're just
space bars
smashing that base
randomly,
bar.
not even a lot, just every now and again. But like, yeah, my left hand is opening drawers in the desk. I stole a bunch of quarters and some. I remember I left there like four rolls of quarters, and at 93, like I was rich for like a couple of days. I bought a bunch of baseball cards and stuff. But outside that, like my relationship with my counselors were always cool. And I always understood it for what it was, because you test them a little bit. Like, let me see if I can tell you this, and if my mom finds out, let me see if I can tell you this. And like, as long as you're not trying to hurt yourself or do anything, so there was boundaries for sure. But there was a lot of times when it was just a non. And even after, when I was going through my last divorce with my kids, like I was like, I need to talk to somebody, and I went to see a counselor, and she's like, well, what are we working on? And I'm like, nothing really. I just need an outlet. Like, I need someone I can just talk to. And she's like, so there's nothing. And I'm like, I'm maybe something comes out, I don't know. But no, I'm not here because this situation happened or anything like that. Like, I just know I'm in a place right now where I don't trust a lot of the people around me. I'm not sure who I can talk to, what will or won't be used against me. And I need somewhere to bounce that off somebody.
We'll find something.
Yeah, we'll find something. Yeah, how would your day go? Okay.
Why are you getting divorced? What's underneath
yeah.
that? Like, what,
Been
you
using a lot of drugs and thinking about jumping off a bridge. Let's start there.
She's like, so how can we not jump off the bridge today?
Yeah. Does that sound like a good idea?
What would you tell somebody you love if they were trying to jump off a bridge,
Like the
right?
40-year-old virgin when he keeps asking questions.
I just, Steve Carell, you made me look like a man-o-lantern.
Yeah. So,
But
yeah.
it's so good. So overall, it sounds like your experience in therapy was positive. It sounds like that was the direct result of you kind of like, in my mind, this is like Jurassic Park, right? Like the velociraptors test the fence. They're smart. They test the boundary. They try to see like, well, maybe this spot doesn't have electricity, right? You were kind of like testing the fence a little bit to see like where the hole's going to be. And when they weren't there, it sounds like that really helped you to kind of lean into that process. And then later down the road, that helped you to seek therapy when you knew you needed it.
It does, yeah. So my let's go through my whole thing. Let's see. I think probably around age 8, 9, I saw my first counselor in South Carolina. Just went to talk to this guy. I don't remember much about it. We would go as a family and as individuals. So I'm guessing it was something I more than I remember. But
And a military brat, you did a lot of that moving around, like
yeah.
under.
So that was at Shaw Air Force Base, South Carolina. Shout out the worst place I've ever lived. But yeah, I was not a fan. But I spent 7 years of my life down there. And then like high school and things like that, like I would move back with my grandmas when my mom would get mad or divorced or whatever. They would have me in church 3 times a week. So that avenue as well. And then prison, I went to prison 3 times. So there's that. In the military prison, they put me in like some drug and alcohol. So, which is funny because there's no one in the military that's supposed to have been on drugs or alcohol, but they got me in classes with some senior master sergeant teaching me about drugs
I
and
think you're not
alcohol.
supposed to be in the military with mental health diagnoses either, are you?
No, but obviously with PTSD and the stress of some military life, like there are counselors and chaplains on base for most people to go see. And oddly enough, one of my oldest books from our fellowship is from a military rehab facility in San Diego. So at some point they saw some. I know when I was in the yeah, if you were caught using or anything like that's how I exited, right? So out prison again, then they put you on probation and you get to talk to these cool people again,
Not cute.
groups, yeah. And ultimately where I ended for me was in an outpatient treatment group. So I definitely have some experience in the area, but
So with the group therapy experience, was that ever nerve-wracking for you? Because like as the therapist in a group, right, I've done a lot of this myself. We are bound by confidentiality laws, like on a state level and on a federal level, which for our listeners who are not aware, in drug and alcohol, confidentiality supersedes HIPAA. Drug and alcohol confidentiality is way stronger than HIPAA. We can't say shit. But your group mates are not bound by that same
No.
confidentiality. So how was it like building trust in that environment, knowing your peers could just like walk out and be like, fuck that guy, he said this.
I traded a food box once to somebody that would help me get on parole. Listen, in my group in the military, like they let the group decide, like, because I was supposed to get paroled, but it was going to be like 3 sessions before the end of my program. And they was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to let you go before you finish this program, which never dawned on me. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You won't let me leave because you want me to do 3 classes? And he was asking, well, we'll talk about it in the group. In the group, I'm like, I hit everybody in the group up. Like, listen, group, we need to come together right now. But no, I do like the group things because it does on some level start to help you recognize that you're not alone. At that point in time, it was more so not only am I not alone, but I'm not weird and this is normal, so I should continue, which was the opposite of probably what I should have gotten out of that. But it's always yeah, it been I'm a social kind of person. Like, I'm gonna
You
talk in the
are.
room no matter what. Like, if we, like, I would joke with my wife all the time. If we fly to Vegas, like, I got three people we have plans with by the time we land. You
Yep.
know, it's so I
That's also kind of how recovery works too. You know, I feel like especially as a result of like some of our shared work in other arenas of podcasting, like we can go anywhere and we have friends, right?
yeah.
It's pretty awesome. So it sounds like you know, I'm careful to like, you know, not misrepresent by any means because this is media. But you know, in our fellowship, we say like the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. And it sounds like that's kind of maybe what you found in group a little bit, like with your peers, that it helped to kind of normalize some of your experiences. Like you said, I'm not weird. Like, bro, you're weird as fuck, but like in the best way, right? Like it
Yeah.
helps to I am too. It's okay.
It's one of those things that's like a double-edged sword for me. Like, yeah, I agree with that statement a lot because obviously I've found my help with other addicts, people who've been through the same things I had. However, I think it's worth noting for someone who's not a big fan of treatments and medicines and things like that, that we don't pretend that those people can't help us if we need it.
So
And
true.
it is something I share with the guys I talk to. I go, listen, that whole, if you haven't walked a mile in my shoes, you don't know, like, shut the fuck up. Like, there's a lot of people that haven't walked a mile in your shoes who can tell you how to save money, who can tell you how to have a healthy marriage, who can tell you how to, you know, we try to isolate ourselves so much. So,
Well, that therapist is in her chair with her master's degree because she knew how to have her shit together in ways that we didn't, right? We're like, you're 30 in an outpatient
And
program and she's
I do remember my
22.
last one. I had a counselor that had he wasn't an addict, and they would just pick at him all the time. Like, how do you know you're not an addict? Do you ever try? He's like, no. I'm like, bro, what are we doing, right? It was like when you had a substitute in elementary. They would just, yeah, like, if once you're healthy, like, say right now, to look at someone who's in active addiction and to think that any normal person couldn't help them with a, I don't even care if it's the, hey, get your shit together, shut up guy. Like, you need to recognize that you're not okay, first of all. And if that's all they do, like, for us is point out that you're not normal, that's a good starting place. But
I agree. I agree. So would you say, and this might be a mixed bag, would you say that like trauma is at all a part of your story?
I didn't think so. But God bless the 12 steps, right?
Right.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And then on not getting into it, like physical abuse levels, sexual abuse levels, just kind of growing, like you said, military brat, like grew up without friends, without I didn't see a lot of my siblings for you know, 8, 9 years at a time. I can tell you this, between that and prison, like you're a prime example. Love you to death, known you a long time. If I don't see you tomorrow or again for 8 years, like, it's not gonna faze me in one fucking, not one bit. And it doesn't make me feel like our relationship's any less strong or anything like that. But like, it, my life has taught me that I can live without you. Like, who, no matter who you are, I can be just fine without you. And so, yeah, it has got me to not face a lot of things or work on things because, like, worst case scenario, you just leave and I'm cool.
Because
You
that's what
know,
you're used to.
it's not the same today. Like, I would be devastated, like, if my wife and I weren't together or something like that happened. But I usually get past the point of like, I should have addressed this a while ago before I do, because I'm comfortable with, like, hey, if this doesn't work out, like, it's gonna work out. So usually someone will bring something to my attention, like, we need to talk about this, and I'm like, oh, we should have probably talked about this months ago. But hey, human. I don't separate myself from the crowd from, but yeah, I got some fucked up shit in my past. And then obviously the kind of the desensitizing to violence that you just learn in prison and military. I run towards gunshots and not away. I don't know if that's normal or not.
I think a lot of us with trauma, you
Yeah.
know, have definitely, it's sort of like the way I explain it is I'm good in a crisis when shit's hitting the fan because the chaos on the outside matches the chaos on the inside. To me, that's calm, that's balance, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but yeah, like I've had a couple incidents in just the last year. Like there was a shooting down the road from my house, and I'm like in the front yard, and I'm trotting towards, and she's like, "Where the fuck are you going?" I'm like, "We go see what's everybody's okay. Like, you know, go see what's going on. You know, look, get a gun, whatever. You know, like it's
Right.
so it's I don't know. I don't know. I don't always weigh consequence or see the gravity of the consequence." In the moment, my interest, my peaked interest will take me towards whatever's going on.
When a normally wired person says, nope, the fuck out of there.
Yeah. My neighbor was laughing at me. He was like, "Where the fuck are you going?"
Wait, is this the neighbor that was like having a heart attack while you were chilling on the porch?
Yeah, no, that's the guy across the street. He didn't have a heart attack, he fell and hit his head.
Oh, is that what happened? Oh, the poor thing.
For the listeners, I don't sit still well. Again, that ADD thing, I don't know if that was legit, and I don't self-diagnose, so I'm not gonna tell you I have it. That bugs me when people say that shit. I'm OCD. I'm ADD. How the fuck do you know? Anyway.
Well, Barb and I talked about that on the last episode where like it kind of cheapens people who really do
Yeah,
struggle with
people
those
who
actual
can't fucking
concerns.
move because they have these things.
When it's
Like
really
people on Call of Duty
debilitating.
telling them they raped each other. I'm always thinking, well, that's a pretty rough word, bud.
It is. It's a very rough word. Shout out to
Yeah.
Damon. That boy says the filthiest shit. But I mean, again, you know what? Maybe I should ask him to come on too, because he's got maybe not. That might tank my podcast.
Hey, clicks. Get clicks.
Right? But for, you know, for sure. So you were trying to meditate with your headphones on and your poor
Yeah.
neighbor, you know,
'Cause I
in
don't
his
sit
front
still
yard.
well, so I have to make myself sit still, and it's been practice. Like some people just naturally do this, I don't. So anyway, I would close my eyes and I wouldn't let anything disturb me, and my neighbor across the street fell and hit his head on a rock, and he was laying in his yard, and the ambulance came, and all these cars were driving by, but I wasn't opening my eyes to see what they were doing, and I ended up opening my eyes like 20 minutes later, and this guy was laying on the ground. So
Meditation is
long
not.
story short, God taught me that day that meditation's stupid and I shouldn't do that. I'm kidding. I still go out on the front porch every morning. I just keep my eyes open and drink my coffee.
Fair. That's one of my favorite moments of the day, too. We love
Instead
a
of
good
getting all
front
wrapped
porch.
up and it's got to be perfect.
I got a good ass front porch, too.
Me too.
So what kind of mental health stuff, when you're working with the guys at the club and at the house, what kind of mental health stuff do you tend to find you bump up against with them?
I saw a ton. Like, and again, I'm not medical, so I don't know. However, oddly enough, if you've ever been to prison, I think you could agree that a lot of the people in there are just there because they didn't have anywhere else to put them. Obviously they committed a crime, but like there's a lot of people in there that probably should be in a facility where they get some help. Same with rehabs, same with whatever. So most rehabs have their own housing of some kind. So if they call me, I already know like they don't want this guy, whatever the reason is.
Kind of sad.
So I will sit them down. Well, because of trouble, maybe, and someone will tell them, hey, we have another resident. Him and him don't get along. They're fighting. Okay, bring him on. And then, but like I sit them down and interview them because we did have a couple like where they had like breaks, like psychotic breaks in the house. I don't want to share anyone's story, but like a couple in particular where I went over there and I was like testing them and like they're clean. And then like they're still like, hey, there's people outside. Hey, there's people upstairs. Hey, there's, and I'm like, you know what?
And it's not math.
I am not equipped to deal with this. And that's usually the conversation we have. Like I said, I remember one in particular. I was like, man, I love you to death, but I need to let you know, like you're scaring me right now. I'm scared for you. I'm scared for me. I'm scared for the other eight people that are living in this house. We really need to sit down. And so we just walk them through getting help. Like, I'm never putting anybody out, as long as, like, there's three rules in that house that, like, you have to follow. There's no drugs allowed, there's no violence allowed, and you don't fuck up the vibe. And rule three is the most important rule, because, like, the house can flip really quick. Like, if you get a couple people in there that are just, like, it can really derail a whole group of people.
I'm sure you remember the recovery house on Cottage Street, and all it takes is one dude.
Yeah, all it takes is one, man, and I'll, like, it, we get that out really quick. But it is usually, like, I've never put anybody, like, pack your shit and get out the door, unless it was, hey, I found drugs in your room, I found you using, or something like that. So with the mental health stuff, like, we try to get them somewhere they can get help. And most people, my town's like 27,000 population. So if I start calling around to mental facilities and I have somebody's name, they know who he is.
Right.
All right. They know. They're like, okay, listen, he does, is to ask him if he's taking this and this. Is he on his stuff? Okay, bring him by. Like, we can usually get someone in and out, unless, of course, they're avoiding those people and then they'll just leave. And I've seen that happen as well. And that's sad. But I've never had anybody, like, really fight me on it. Like, hey, listen, because a lot of those guys get checks. So it's, again, very attractive to be like, okay, this is guaranteed money. He's going to be able to be here. But, like, if anyone's in that house more than 60 days, like, we really start having conversations about, like, what's your next move? This is, you're not supposed to be getting comfortable hanging pictures on the wall and shit like that here. This
right,
is
get on your temporary way and get out.
Yeah.
And the temporary goal. So it sounds to me like at that, like, maybe that's arbitrary, but like the 60 day mark, the 90 day mark, whatever, you start, if a dude is still there, you start looking around going, are we serving you? Are we doing our job? Are we teaching you?
Well, there are some, so like recovery courts, things like that. Like, a lot of them will tell those guys, like, you're going to be there for a year. So if they come to me and I say, like, when's your move out date? And they're like, I got to be here at least a year. Then I won't mess with them on that year.
Okay.
If it is, hey, I'm just trying to get on my feet. Yeah. It's okay. Well, what's your goal for the next 60 days? Oh, I want to get my driver's license, or I want to get a job. It's 60 days. Do you get your driver's license? Do you get a job? If not, why not? What are you doing? What it's just some common people who started from nowhere and came up checking on people who are trying to do the same thing.
Which sounds a lot like what we do in mental health case management, what we do in care coordination. And I love that the club has kind of made it into something accessible, as opposed to, like, you have to have a master's degree and a title to be able to help people, which is not, that's not always the case.
No, and some, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there are some people with those titles that will call me and say, Willis, and I can't say this. Can you have this conversation? Because I don't shy away from candid conversations. It's something that my career field has really pushed into me. You got to care about people enough to give them the truth to where they need to go. So it's very easy for me to, like, love someone enough to tell them, like, hey, this is not a good look. This is where you need to be looking, or hey, that's kind of a pipe dream. I went to prison for the first time 24 years ago.
Wow.
And they were talking, like, people would be getting out and they'd be like, you know, there's grants for felons. If you get out, they can give you a grant. And you get... My last time I went to prison was, I can't count. What's 09? 15 years ago? That same story still going around. I go to the prison still twice a month now to carry a message or to take some help in there. And they're still talking about that shit. Like, everyone always wants to grasp onto, there's some way to get free money. This is going to, my life's going to fix itself. And with all these programs out there and things like that, it's not that far fetched. So a lot of people really will just come out, like, trying to find the next piece of paper they can fill out that's going to fucking solve all their problems. So really just kind of getting boots on the ground. That's what I've seen work for people, is you go to work and you outperform most of the people around you, because most of the people aren't willing to do it. Like, it's just fun to watch people kind of get off that tit, if you will.
Yeah.
If they need to. Like, there are some people that, like, hey, that's what that tit's there for.
Well, and I think it inspires a little bit of agency in your guys too, you know, like, step into the energy that's meant for you, right? And build something for yourself. And I think the value of your personal experience, right? Like, you, again, you said, like, I'm not a mental health professional. I'm not this, I'm not that. But you have been where they have been. And I think that ultimately they respect that, by the sound of it. And the fact that you have constructed that for yourself, probably, I'm guessing, makes them feel like they can do it too.
Yeah, I just know Man, I there's a lot of misinformation, right? Like, so like when I came out of prison, like I was told like you know, I'd ruined my whole life at 19 years old. I was never going to be able to, so I was military. I can't never wear a military uniform again. That's true. I can never vote again. That's not true.
Say it
You
louder
know,
for the people in the back.
I'll never be able to land a serious job. That's so far from true.
Not true at
It's
all.
ridiculous. Like, for people to be using felonies as an excuse to not work is laughable to me. Like, I try not to because it's disrespectful, but I would laugh in your face. Like, when you're like, I can't find a job, I'm a felon. I'm like, shut the fuck up. Like, really, like that's not real. But
Most
you buy into
counties.
this shit. So then you get in line and you sit down with everybody else and you wait your fucking turn. So for someone to get out and realize very quickly, it doesn't take long. Like, if you work for 90 days, you're like, oh wow, this works. You know, to find that they can, I don't have to rely on that. I don't have to listen to that. I can go do what I want to do. I mean, there's borders to everything, but for the most part, like, you go put in the time at work and you don't spend it on crack, lottery tickets, fucking monsters and cigarettes. Like, you're already outperforming the
Hats and
majority of
shoes.
society. You know, it's really empowering to realize when you come from somewhere where, like, especially with our history, where I've gone decades trying so hard to be successful and just convincing myself I can't, to realizing like, hey, I was just doing it wrong. Like, it really is simple. Like, if you're trying that hard, you're probably doing it wrong. Like, it just takes some sit down time and some patience and some grit. But
And
I
like the
did.
story in your head is half the battle. If you keep telling yourself that same old story, that's the story you're still writing.
I just, for the listeners, like, because everyone doesn't know me, like, when I got clean, I didn't have a house, didn't have a car, didn't have a job. And when I did get a job, I was making $157 every 2 weeks after child support and walking to work. And like, I bought my first house less than 5 years later. I'm not special. Like, I have no degrees. I have no skill set outside of being able to run my mouth well. And we didn't talk about it, but I always joke, like, if those people who gave me Ritalin had just told me to go work retail, like, the whole problem would have solved itself. Like,
That's real. That's real.
It is. It's like 10-second conversations all day long, you know, jump place to place, manage complex areas with a lot going on at one time, and I'm fine. Ask me to sit in front of a press and make a machine part for the next 8 hours, and I'm the worst employee you have. Like, I don't want to dog medicines and medical field. They're smarter than me, whatever. I'm sure there's a place for all of it. But for me, I can tell you, I just wasn't trying to do the right things. And that's the problem, is everybody's opinion. Everybody has to be the same. I have to be able to do all the things you can do. And reality is, I can't. Like, I can't. But I can do some things that I can do that maybe you can't. I don't know. I
You can
find
do a
what I'm
lot of
good
things
at, and
I
I
can't.
double down on it. And all of a sudden, my life's okay. But
Right.
if I was still back there trying to be a machinist because I'm convinced that that's what I'm supposed to be, I'm a failure, you know? And then why wouldn't I just give up, you know? So it's just, like, understanding you got to find your place in this world.
Well, I think that speaks to, you know, like the recovery process and the therapy process. You know, Barb said something in a previous episode that, you know, I think really resonates. And that's the idea that, you know, recovery turns our our deficits into our assets, right? So like what may have been viewed as like, oh, this kid has ADHD, he needs medicated, he's bouncing off the walls, right? You have now turned into, I'm really good at retail and I can bump around and talk to lots of different people and I can task switch really quickly and I can multitask. And that's where you thrive, where before somebody might have looked at that and said, mm-mm.
Yeah. So one of the things about amphetamines, I don't know how it went when you tried a new drug, but when I tried a new drug, I generally was like, what's this going to do to me, man? Like, is this good? I was still going to do it, no doubt. But like, right. I want to know, the first time I tried meth, I just felt like it was that stuff they gave me that made me better. You know, there was no uncomfortable moment. Like, as soon as it was there, I was like, I already know what this is. I'm fine. Cool. We're good. I didn't, you're talking about trauma. Trauma's weird because you don't know you have it until something fucking freaks you out. I have a nephew that they were putting on, and I almost fucking cried. And like, I started yelling at my brother, like, completely, like, do not fucking do that. Do not do that. You know, and I didn't even know, like, I had that there, like, that I blamed it on that or whatever it was. But like, Well, I was like, man, kids are kids. Like, you're fucking 9 years old. And I don't buy it. Like, I don't. Like, I'm sure there's someone, like, I've seen people that I'm like, okay, you
Maybe
should.
you should take your meds.
Kids that don't want to listen and want to talk in class, like, come on, man.
That sounds like
Like,
my 10-year-old.
yeah, that sounds, yeah. They're like me before you put me on that shit. That's what it sounds like.
I
But
wanted
yeah.
to remind you, you said, I forget what the context was. You said it a few minutes ago, talking about like you're talking to your guy and you're admitting, I'm scared. In this moment, you're scaring me. And I think that that's really powerful to listen
Yeah.
to like a grown ass man. Like, you've been to prison, you've been in the military. Our listeners can't see you, but you're probably every bit as tattooed as I am, right?
Yeah.
To hear a grown man admit vulnerably, right? Like, I'm fearful and I feel these things and I'm a little bit nervous or not so confident in this area. Where did you learn that? Why is that okay for you right now?
I may have learned how to talk about it more, but it's always been there. Like, if somebody's really out there, especially somebody you care about, and like, I don't know, I care about every guy I meet, and it's not that, but like, I care about every addict I meet or every person I meet that's trying to get right. And when you can point a problem out, when I can say, hey, listen, you're smoking crack, that's not good for you, you need to stop that. This is probably causing a lot of your problems. After that's gone, we can work on things. But when you have somebody who's not there, who already is clean, who already is whatever, that you're like, I have no answer for this, and I have no farther how far this is going to go. But I don't have it in me to throw people away or whatever it is just for no reason. I recognize I need to find a solution, but I don't have it. But in the meantime, we're in a dangerous situation. The one I had was walking around with a knife in his hand. He was convinced people were breaking in this house.
Love that
He
for you.
called me. I live 15 minutes away. I come over. He's like, they're outside. I'm like, I just came in from outside. Like, bro, like, we have cameras all over this place. So let's look at him. He's like, I can hear him. And I'm like, we're in trouble. You know, like, I don't know what, if you just sit there, I'll sit here, have a cigarette, whatever it might be. But like, there's, yeah, you don't, these are people that, like, up until that day, like, you were going to meetings with, or you were talking to normal. And to see that flip, that switch flip, it can be scary.
And it sounds like you met it with like authenticity and you're,
And he listened. That was crazy to me. I was like, how am I gonna get through this kid? Because he's out of his fucking mind right now. And I was like, he was like, I know. And I'm like, are you high? He's like, I don't know. Are you using anything? I don't know. I don't know. And I'm just like, and I'm like, he's fucking lying. Like, you gotta piss in this. That one's broke. You gotta piss in this. That one's broke. You gotta, like, he's not high. Like,
One's broke. Was
yeah.
it
So it,
always easy for you to connect emotionally with other people? Like, growing up with the military culture, having been to
oh
prison,
yeah.
that
Yeah, I fit
emotional
in.
connection piece.
Yeah, I fit in almost instantly. I find somebody in the room or whatever, because like, it's I went to different school every 2 years or less. I different state half the time, different country sometimes. So yeah, is I think that's pretty typical of military kids. Like, a lot of
You
us,
learn how
like,
to like chameleon
yeah,
wherever you
you well you jump on community stuff, like, sports.
go.
Sports cards, riding bikes, like, whatever it was, like, whatever you do, I do, we do. But yeah, there wasn't much roots laid down, like, let's talk about, like, what we like, things like that, well, growing up. But you just find the things that are universally loved and do those things.
And how is that with like other dudes in recovery now? Because I know like you're the first guy. This is something that like a lot of people get nervous about with respect to therapy and with respect to recovery from addiction. The idea that like I'm gonna hug people and I'm gonna make friends with people and tell them I love them. And like, how does that work out for you now? It seems like it's a little more grounded.
No, I'm good. So, like, I don't hugs and everything growing up was normal. Showing love, talking out loud was normal. Very church-based, even though it's something I'm not into today. Like, a lot of the principles we talk about, I grew up with. One thing that just struck me is weird. Like, people would say, I love you. And I don't mind saying I love you to people I love, but like, guys in recovery, like, hey, love you. And I'm like, okay, you too, man. And like, I still just. It's gotten better, man. It's gotten better, like, to
I'm
where I can
picturing
say it. But
I'm
like, it's
picturing
not that I
Troy
didn't
like
appreciate it, and it's not that I didn't reciprocate, but like, it made me laugh. Like, I couldn't say it. I'd be like, yeah.
Which is fucking ridiculous. So, do you think Troy's a whole foot taller than you, maybe?
No, absolutely not.
No,
Troy
you
can't be
wouldn't
more
admit
than
it.
2-3 inches taller than me.
You're not going to admit it on a recording.
It just looks more because you have to stand far away because he's 6 foot wide too.
Right?
Yeah.
Big for nothing. I picture him like, I love you, man. Right?
Yeah.
It's okay. Bye.
Every time Backpack hugs me, I get a shoulder to the Adam's apple. He's like
Yeah.
The perfect height that every time I re.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So
that's the shit they don't tell you about in rehab. You're going to take shoulders to the throat all the time. Right?
All the time.
So, in kind of, I guess, putting a bow on this whole thing, what would you say to the people who are maybe seeking therapy, thinking about going to therapy, thinking about starting their recovery walk? What would you say to somebody who's either starting off or maybe who's disillusioned, who's had some bad experiences? What would you tell them?
Oh, people suck. Like, right. Like, listen, you're always going to run into a bad something. Like,
yeah.
I know I oversimplify shit, but like, I love pizza. I've eaten a bad pizza. Like,
for sure.
If you have a bad experience, go to a different one.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a shot. My big thing is, and I used to do this, is like, just don't buy into the first clever thing you hear.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe try it. Maybe consider it.
That's how cults are formed.
let's tiptoe in and see if that works. But
right.
I'll hear one thing and I'll be like, I have to do that all the time, and
Mm-hmm.
that'll work. That'll fix me. There's always like a hot word for the year. Like, it was autism was one a while back. What's the
narcissism?
Neurodivergent.
Yeah.
Is that a new one? Yeah, that's a
You
fun
learned a
one.
new word.
I'm neurodivergent. just slow down.
Yeah.
Even if you are, you might not be next year, so chill out. You know,
Mm-hmm.
just go in, be honest and authentic. And my one thing that's helped me a lot is I try to not have an end goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Possibilities of what might happen, but if I try to decide what the winning is going to be, I usually sell myself short. So I've learned to just go in, be honest, be authentic, and see where. Like I said, if I had fought for what I thought I should be, like, I'd be a machinist. That was my career for. That's what I wanted to be. I don't math well, and I have zero fucking patience. It just was never going to work out, but just following the path it led me to, and lo and behold, I found success. So
beautiful. So before we wrap up, is there anything going on at the club? Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to share with our listeners relating to Club Agape or anything close to your heart in Asheville?
Find us on Facebook. Like and follow our stuff.
Oh, you can find the club on Facebook?
Yes, absolutely.
I love that for you.
It's the heart with a semicolon logo. It's Asheville, Ohio. We
and that's
do
Club
events all the
Agape,
times.
AGAPE.
Yeah, apostrophes.
Nice.
And
I can probably link that in the description of the podcast too for our
maybe.
listeners.
But yeah, we do events for social events for every holiday, things like that. Our biggest two are the walk that just got done Labor Day weekend. And we usually do a big raffle, reverse raffle, offsite catered event in around St. Patrick's Day every year.
That's a great event. It was so you've done it twice now, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. We usually go to that one and it
Yeah,
is
a couple hundred
a
people there.
blast.
Usually it's a good time.
The
Good
food.
Food right in the armpit of the year in Ohio. Christmas is over, the weather sucks, it's wet. So we try to usually do like a luau theme or something fun like that, get some summer vibes in the building. And hang out for a day. But it's based on teaching people who, for whatever reason, got themselves out of the social web that they need to get back into it. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much, Will, for taking the time to, you know, share a little bit about the club and a little bit about you. We definitely appreciate your time, and I'm sure we'll see you back at some point. So to our listeners, as a reminder, please take care of yourselves and the people around you. If you or someone you know is in need of immediate mental health assistance, please dial 988 for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. For immediate assistance, finding treatment, support groups, and community-based organizations, send your zip code in a text to 435-748. If you would like to contact the Swearapist podcast, you can email us at theswearapistpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the pod financially, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/theswearapist. Links are in the description. Email me If Shit Gets Weird. I'm your host, Lisa Hoffman. Thank you for listening.